Oh, man, it's a big Friday. Big Friday show. It's huge. Big Friday show. Second hour, it's going to be the game show. We got the game show all lined up for you. Top secret guest coming in. Has Jimmy Akin showed up yet? No? Oh, we don't know if he's in the building yet. But top secret guest. Don't want to talk about who it's going to be. This hour, we have Deacon Stephen Graydonis with us, film reviewer and deacon, and we're going to talk about the best films of the year 2018. If you'd like to get in on that conversation, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Deacon Graydonis is the creator of the Decent Film Guide. You can find it at decentfilms.com. He's the film critic for the National Catholic Register, and he's a member of the New York Film Critics Circle. He co-hosts the cable TV show Real Faith, and that's with two E's, on Net TV with film critic David Deserto. And he's got a BFA in media arts from the School of Visual Arts in New York. So he's one of those very, very fancy New Yorkers with their degrees and insight into culture. Deacon Stephen Graydonis, thanks for being with us. Was that
not
enough?
Thank you, Si. It's good to be here.
That you didn't find that description app? You're a fancy but wait,
you know, a lot of us are a lot less fancy than you might think.
Oh, okay. All right. And you, but your diocese is actually the Archdiocese of Newark, across the river from New York City.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So you saw some films in 2018, I'm assuming, because I read your column in the National Catholic Register, which I highly recommend to people. Read Deacon Graydonis's column. And some were good, some were bad. But overall, it struck me that you seem to think this was a pretty good year for films.
You know, what I go by is how hard I have to work to come up with my list of the top films of the year. So every year I come up with 30 films. There's my top 10 and then my 10 runners up and then my 10 honorable mentions. And some years I never run out of movies, but some years I have to go further afield. There's a lot more foreign films. There's a lot more indies. And then other years that seem to come a little easier. And this was one of the easier years. So that, to me, makes it a good year.
Oh, very, very good. So I imagine many of our listeners are members of families. As a matter of fact, almost everyone I've ever met has been a member of a family. But lots of families out there listening. And you know the complaints about family movies. They have been made for years and years and years against Hollywood. Maybe that tide is turning a bit. How'd we do for family movies this year?
You know, compared to the previous year, 2018 was a really good year for family films. The previous year was just not a good year. There was not much to get excited about. But this year we started out with a really strong film, Paddington 2, which I took my whole family to the theater to see. And you know that's an expensive proposition these days, yeah, especially when you have 7 kids. We all fell in love with it, and I was sure it was going to be my favorite family film of the year. It's a movie that celebrates gentleness and kindness in a way that almost comes off as a rebuke to the crassness and freneticism of typical, yeah, Hollywood family fare. But then I was surprised because we saw something that bumped it out of that top space. We saw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is just beyond brilliant. This is an animated superhero family adventure. It's in theaters right now, and I highly recommend everyone listening to go see it. It's from the makers of Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and the Lego Movie, and it's just as nuts as both of those, but with a lot more heart. It's a father-son story. It's a coming-of-age story. It's not only my favorite family film of the year, but my favorite superhero action movie as well.
Wow. Wow. So big kudos for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I saw a few minutes of Paddington Bear. Hugh Grantham was in it.
So you did see Paddington 2. That's the
Paddington
one.
Paddington 2, yeah.
He is hilarious.
Isn't he brilliant?
He's brilliant in this. He's doing a kind of send-up of his own screen persona, but also of like actorly pretensions in general. And he gets to do a whole range of characters. And, you know, Nicole Kidman was in the first Paddington, and I think she was a little more malicious and a little scarier than she needed to be. And for a film so gentle that you can watch it with even the youngest children, Hugh Grant really strikes the right note in Paddington 2.
Again, 888-318-7884, our number. We're talking with Deacon Stephen Gradonis, the film reviewer for the National Catholic Register, among other duties that he has, including being a deacon in the Archdiocese of Newark. What about – I did not see Ralph Breaks the Internet. Was it called Ralph Breaks the Internet? Yeah, Ralph Breaks the Internet?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What did you think of it?
This is the sequel to Wreck-It Ralph, and it's very creative. It goes far beyond the original film, which I thought was kind of a color by numbers Hollywood story of accepting differences and accepting who you are. Ralph Breaks the Internet kind of goes into trickier emotional and thematic territory. It deals with some complex themes around friendship and loyalty and kind of possessive behavior. It's the story. If you didn't see the first one, it's the story of video game avatars who have a life behind the screen. So it's a little bit like Toy Story,
yeah.
Where the toys come to life. Only in this case, it's characters like Pac-Man and Q-Bert and so forth. So Wreck-It Ralph is a video game villain, but he's really kind of a nice guy, and he's friends with a racing character named Vanellope, and they break out from their 8-bit world into the wider world of the internet. And so it explores all kinds of aspects of modern online life and the horribleness of online comments. And it's a very interesting document about the digital age that we live in. And I thought it was really interesting.
Okay. So the one of among the kids movies that I did see, and I enjoyed it, was Incredibles 2.
Yeah, where I thought Wreck-It Ralph was, I thought that Ralph Breaks the Internet went beyond its predecessor. I think that The Incredibles, the original 2006 Incredibles, Brad Bird's family film masterpiece, I think it's one of the greatest animated films ever made, one of the best family films ever made. It explores the family dynamics and marriage and family in some really sophisticated and interesting ways. It's a movie that really celebrates and even lionizes family life and married life, but also really explores some of the complexities and some of the difficulties in a way that is both sophisticated enough for adults, but also emotionally accessible to children. The sequel, Incredibles 2, I think is not as good as the original, but it's still much better than the vast majority of Hollywood family films. Brad Bird is very talented, and he's really invested a lot of heart into these characters.
I see what you're saying about the first one. It's a movie that made the family itself the superhero, really. Instead of it being an individual, it was the family unit, which is really an impressive thing to do.
I have to say, there's a movie in theaters right now this weekend, Glass from M. Night Shyamalan. It's a sequel, turns out to be a sequel in a trilogy that he began 19 years ago with Unbreakable, about Bruce Willis as a father and a husband who also turns out to be a superhero. And in that movie, he's on the verge of leaving his family. And I was very disappointed in that film for a lot of reasons, and one of them was that it really didn't connect the father's hero identity with his responsibility to his wife and child, that he has a duty to be a hero to them. And this is where I think The Incredibles is really so successful, is that it recognizes that your first duty is to be a hero to your family. It's to be there for, as a man, to be there for your wife and for your children. And in this film, it explores Bob's responsibility to be there to support his wife when she has an opportunity to step outside the home, to explore her talents and her ability to achieve something in the wider world. I think it's not as successful in realizing those themes as the first film was, because Bob doesn't ever have that moment of clarity in this film that he has in the first film, where he realizes he's been kind of a jerk in a lot of ways.
Yeah, don't you think too that there's I don't know if it's a trope, but it's certainly a kind of pattern in Hollywood movies that whenever dad is left with the kids, the series of disasters that ensues is meant really to applaud mothers. It's meant to say moms do incredible stuff. And I know that there's the thing about the bumbling dad and the Homer Simpson syndrome and all that, but I don't mind that. I think that that's I kind of liked that in this movie, that it's a struggle to take care of kids.
You know, that's a really good point, and I appreciate that twist that you put on it. I also, though, I want to applaud Brad Bird for not making Bob Parr completely useless as a house husband.
Right.
You know, he does struggle, but he also has his little victories. He gets on top of things. He succeeds. He stays up at night, and he learns Dash's new math so that he can actually help him with his homework.
Right.
And so he does have those moments of pulling things together. Brad Bird's never going to go totally for the stereotype in that way.
Excellent point. I love the line too. I won't get it right, but something about when did they change math or why did they change math?
Yes. Well, that's kind of a reference to the fact that The Incredibles exists in a temporally ambiguous perpetual 1960s, right?
Yeah.
So it's got like that 1960s James Bond vibe. You'll notice that there are no cell phones, there are no flat screen televisions. It has that chronological, and the attitudes in it are a little bit set in that cultural context as well. That's what he's doing there.
I got it. Deacon Stephen Greidanis is our guest. We're going to go through all of the best movies of 2018 with Deacon Greidanis this hour. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Before I go to a break, Deacon, so among the family movies, then, it sounds like Paddington 2 and Spider-Man are your superstars of the year. Like, go see these movies or get these movies and see them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these are movies that are not only great entertainment for the family, but really celebrate the family in a way that goes above and beyond even better Hollywood films like Incredibles 2. I mean, all three of these are really good, but Paddington 2 has this gentle spirit, and Spider-Man 2 has a father-son or Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse has a father-son relationship unlike practically anything that I've seen in Hollywood. Only Finding Nemo really rivals it for that father-son relationship.
Deacon Stephen Greidanis, our guest, 888-31-TRUTH, our number. You know January is pro-life month because you can tell that it's pro-life month. As a matter of fact, you can tell that today is the day of the Walk for Life in Washington, D.C., because if you turn on the news, they're very busy ignoring it. But while we're in the midst of pro-life month, we want to make sure that you get all the pro-life materials you might need for yourself or for your group, for your family, and everything that's in the pro-life category here at Catholic Answers is on sale for $5 an item, whether it's a book, a DVD, a movie, anything. Just go to shop.catholic.com and visit the $5 pro-life category to get yours.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio with Matthew Bunsen. Join us every week as we talk with the Register's expert writers and editors about the news you need to know and offer authentic Catholic insights on the important stories that impact your life. Register Radio, every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern and Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern here on EWTN Global Catholic Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. It is Friday, and of course, that means a huge Friday show. Second hour, Jimmy Akin, super top secret guest coming in for the game show. This hour, Deacon Stephen Greidanis is here with us to work through the best films of 2018, and it feels good to kind of say some positive things about the media. It's our usual position, as you might guess, is sometimes a bit more harsh. I want to ask you, because we were just talking about the the media's concerted efforts over 46 years to ignore the Walk for Life. But there was a movie that tried very hard to pierce, I think, the public consciousness regarding abortion this year, and in some cases was successful. I'd like to get your take on it. The movie Gosnell?
Yes. Gosnell, the subtitle is The Trial of America's Biggest Serial Killer, directed by Nick Searcy and starring Dean Cain, among other people.
And a good pro-life movie, a good movie. Where do we place it?
So faith-based films often fall into a trap of first painting everything very black and white and really kind of pitching the movie entirely to the faithful, preaching to the choir. And I have to give Gosnell credit for not making a number of mistakes in this regard. First of all, it finds an angle on the subject of the trial of Gosnell, who ran this house of horrors in Philadelphia. I'm sure that many of our listeners remember, as I do, following the news as this story was breaking. And it took a while for it to break because, and this is the thing that the movie hits really hard, nobody wanted to cover it. You know, there was a huge story here, and there was a huge atrocities going on. But because it was abortion, everybody, the media was very hands off. Law enforcement was very hands off, which is how this horror show went on for as long as it did. The health yeah. inspections were being done and so forth. And the movie dramatizes that very well. And so the movie's angle, and I think this is a shrewd move on the part of the filmmakers, is not abortion is bad, but we need to be honest in dealing with abortion. We need to look at it. We need to be willing to acknowledge what's going on. And I think that's a smart move. The filmmakers make some other smart moves. It's a film that's made with some craft and some skill. And Dean Cain, I think, is better in this film as the police detective who kind of stumbles onto this. There's almost a kind of an opposite I forgot what I was going to say there for a second.
Oh, that's right. So Dean Cain stumbles upon the case.
Yeah.
As a journalist or.
No. He's a police detective, but he's not. They're not looking for this. So this is something that they kind of stumble onto, and they're forced to engage with it. There are some aspects in which I think the movie doesn't really succeed as well as it could have, particularly in the courtroom drama. Courtroom drama is something that's hard to do well because there's really a temptation as a filmmaker to lay out the case that you want the audience to accept the same yeah. way as a lawyer is trying to get the jury to accept their case. And so you don't really make the opposite case as well as the people who are really advocating for that position should make. And for me as a critic, for me as a viewer, I feel like I want to feel like both lawyers are trying as hard as possible to persuade me of what their point of view is. And when I don't feel that way, then I feel like the movie is, as I said, preaching to the choir. And that's where I think that Gosnell could have done a better job than it did.
Fair enough. We're going to keep working our way through the best movies of the year 2018, but we're going to try to get some calls in here as well. Kevin in Des Moines, Iowa is listening on Iowa Catholic Radio. Kevin, your question for Deacon Stephen Gradonis.
Yes. Hi, guys. I actually had two questions. One of them was, to begin with, I actually really enjoy your website and enjoy your reviews before we go anywhere.
Thank you.
But I was wondering why. Yes, of course. I was wondering why you had so much praise, I guess, for Ralph Breaks the Internet. I saw it, and I know that you said that you thought the first one wasn't as good, but I saw that, and I actually had an opposite reaction. I do think that some points that you pointed out, like how the Internet can be quite nasty with its comments, were a good part, but it seemed like it kind of lost its soul a little bit by not having nearly any of the characters from the first movie, as well as kind of just rushing through the end at the point where Penelope was kind of not telling Ralph anything about what she was planning to do. But at the same time, Ralph should have been overhearing. And the second question I had was, have you ever considered for your website delving into other media like video games and such? I'm just curious about that.
Okay, thank you. Let me answer the second question first. I get a lot of queries from people who say, are you aware of anyone who does what you do for video games or for books and other media and so forth? And I really don't. I would love to see someone who knows those worlds try to engage them the way that I'm doing them here. It's not something I would be interested in featuring at Decent Films, but I would certainly be happy to point people to useful resources in that regard, you know, anything that I was aware of. And I do know some people who've done a little bit of that, but not specifically video games right now. I don't know anyone who's doing that work now. For Ralph Breaks the Internet, here's where I come at it. Wreck-It Ralph, to me, is a movie that exists well within the parameters of what many other Hollywood family films have done. It's a very familiar story about a character who is ostracized, who is somehow different, and then we learn that she's being wrongfully ostracized and that her differences really make her special and that she's much more special than we thought. And those aren't bad themes, but they're so familiar. What I liked about Wreck-It Ralph or about Ralph Breaks the Internet is that it goes beyond a lot of these familiar themes. And it's really about who we are today as people living in a digital world. There are virtual metaphors in the film about how the internet works and how we interact with the internet, about how we use search engines, about that desire to get that next piece of information, or about the distraction of online ads, about some of the dark places on the internet, as well as, you know, it's really about our foibles. It's about how we live today and about how online relationships change the way that people interact, about the way that men and women interact. There's kind of an analogy between the way that Ralph and Vanellope interact and some of the ways that online dating and online relationships can become introduce new kinds of problems into human behavior. So I found it interesting because it made me think about things that an average Hollywood family film would not make me think of. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I'll definitely have to contemplate that. That was something I hadn't considered, honestly. So I definitely appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right, sure.
Thanks very much for that call. 888-318-7884 is the number if you have some comment or question about the movies of 2018 for Deacon Stephen Graydonis. 888-318-7884. Let's move into the action films. Good year, bad year. What'd you make of this year for action films?
I think it was a pretty good year. There were a number of action movies, and I have to say I enjoy well-crafted action. Two of the movies that I'm most looking forward to seeing on the big screen this year are a couple of Jackie Chan films in the Police Story series that are coming back to the big screen and coming to home video from Criterion, and he is the absolute master. But we have somebody in Hollywood who's no slouch, and that's Tom Cruise. And his Mission Impossible movies are just a national treasure. And you know, the latest one, Fallout, this conclusion to what is kind of a sequel trilogy, I think, you know, he's working harder than any two Hollywood action stars half his age,
right,
to entertain us. And the stunts are amazing. But more than that, the director, Christopher McQuarrie, who, by the way, has just signed to do two new Mission Impossible movies back to back, he's crafted his two Mission Impossible movies to date around a thesis. And the thesis in this film is that Tom Cruise's character, Ethan Hunt, is a super spy who cares as much about one life as about millions of lives. For him, the only acceptable level of collateral damage is zero. Now, we're talking about a genre in which human life is often cheap and action stars often shrug at even sizable amounts of collateral damage of even innocent people. I kind of winced through one of the disposable Dwayne Johnson movies that I saw this year, Skyscraper, because a lot of security guards are just blown away and he's just kind of shrugging it off. And I'm like, you know, these are people. They had families and there's a moment in Mission Impossible Fallout where a random person just wanders into a very dangerous scene, and the scene comes to a halt because for Hunt, she must not be shot. And he's got to, you know, it doesn't matter what he has to do to save her life.
Yeah.
And then there's also, he's put in a moral dilemma of, is he going to allow police officers to be killed in order to prevent a bad guy from getting away? And for a movie to care that much about the lives of anonymous characters, I think is something that you don't see in a lot of action movies.
I'm looking forward to it then, because we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. I got a couple follow up questions for you about Tom Cruise and Mission Impossible Fallout, and also get your take on other fine or maybe not so fine action movies this year. Deacon Stephen Graydonis, our guest, our number 888-318-7884. Any question at all about the movies is welcome.
Catholic Answers Live.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old or help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture's moral center continues to fly apart, and with every form of deviance publicly aired and celebrated, we have no choice but to equip our kids to understand about such issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. Silence can no longer be an option. If we're not teaching our children how to understand tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging on to the shop at Catholic.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into, or back to, the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Purvis.
And I'm Deacon Harold Burke Sivers. The Morning Glory team talks about the pro-life legacy of Martin Luther King.
Monday morning, 7 Eastern. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We've got to go faster. We've got to get through all the best movies of 2018. And I'm not going to get you bogged down, but we were talking about Mission Impossible Fallout, Tom Cruise's efforts. The man is an amazing person. Did he fly on the outside of an airplane in this movie? Or was that just the last one?
That was the last one.
Yeah.
He's done in Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, the movie that he made with Brad Bird. That was the first one where I noticed him going to these real extremes with the stunts. He wanted to go to the real Burj Khalifa for this scene, this tallest building in the world, where he's running around on the outside of the building. And then in the follow up, Rogue Nation, he's hanging on the outside of the jet. And that's just a great stunt, and it's very well filmed.
Yeah.
And in this movie, he does a halo jump, high altitude, low opening of the parachute. He does a lot of other things. There's a great fist fight staged in a bathroom with Henry Cavill from he's the Superman from the new DC films.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right.
A lot of great action in this film.
All right. Any other great action films that you can point to this year?
I should just briefly mention Black Panther. I also really enjoyed Ant-Man and the Wasp. Black Panther, an important film for its exploration of what's called Afrofuturism, for being the first mainstream superhero movie with an almost all-black cast. Ant-Man and the Wasp, some great visuals. We should also give a shout-out to not exactly an action movie, but in kind of in the in the neighborhood, A Quiet Place, from husband-wife team John Krasinski and Emily Blunt. It's really more of a thriller horror than an action film, but it's very pro-family. It's even pro-life. This is a rare mainstream Hollywood film that celebrates the complementarity of masculine and feminine without necessarily being rigid about gender roles. You know, we're hearing a lot in the news right now about toxic masculinity and what masculinity really means. And this is a movie that has considerable masculinity on display as well as femininity. And these are not, you know, cross-examined or problematized in quite the way that they are in a lot of Hollywood films. And I think this is a very complicated discussion, and there are a lot of things we can say, but I think there's something to be said for a movie like this that really celebrates these virtues.
How great. It is a complicated, and we shouldn't oversimplify it. I'm just not buying Gillette razors anymore. But other than that, documentaries. How do we do with documentaries? I know the thing about documentaries is I feel like in the older days, not too long ago, people didn't watch documentaries. But it seems like with digital media, the thing that has benefited more than anything is documentaries, because people can just get them and watch them now.
Documentaries are real movies, and sometimes they're the best made movies of the year. And I think it's fantastic that we have much more exposure to documentaries. We were talking about what a great year it was for family films. Let's not forget, Science Fair is a documentary. It's also a family film. It's about kids from all over the world competing for a global science fair prize. And there's some really interesting projects. A lot of people enjoyed Free Solo. It's a rock climbing documentary about Alex Honnold, the first person to climb up El Capitan without any ropes or security, any kind of special equipment, or without any partner. There's many others I could mention very quickly. Three Identical Strangers, Shirkers, Minding the Gap, Hale County This Morning, This Evening. All of these are great films, but there are two for our listeners that I particularly want to highlight.
All right.
And those are Wim Wenders' Pope Francis, A Man of His Word, and my favorite documentary of the year, Morgan Neville's Won't You Be My Neighbor, about Mr. Rogers.
Okay, so tell us about the Pope. Wim Wenders made a Pope Francis documentary, huh? So so what do you make of the documentary? Do you recommend it because it's a good documentary? Or it's a topic that we'd be interested in as Catholics? Or what direction is your commendation coming from?
I can't recommend a movie unless I appreciate both on some level what it's saying, but also how it says it. Uh-huh. So, yes, I think Wenders finds a really interesting angle on presenting certain aspects of Pope Francis's message. I don't want to give the impression that I don't have any criticisms of the film at all. But what he does is he connects Pope Francis's message to his name, and thus to his namesake, Francis of Assisi.
Okay.
And so he explores Francis's messages with regard to environmentalism and interreligious dialogue and other topics. I think it's a somewhat limited presentation because he really focuses on the aspects of Pope Francis's message that would go over well with non-believers, with
yes.
secularists,
uh-huh.
which is fine. I think we should do that. We should present those aspects of his teaching. But then, you know, you come to some of his, so for instance, there's very little sense of a theological vision. We don't hear much about Jesus at all, nothing about hell or Satan, which this Pope has really, you know, hit on very hard. He talks about these topics a lot.
Kind of a selective feel to it.
What I said in my review, I think I said this in my review, is that there's nothing in this movie that would make any of the members of U2 squirm if they were watching it.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, that's a good summary. That's a very clear image.
But having said that, a lot of Francis's message does come across in the film, and you really get that sense. And this is one way in which these two documentaries and these two figures, Pope Francis and Mr. Rogers have something in common, which is their ability to address a crowd and to connect in a very personal way with one person. So many people have had that experience that they feel like Francis, like Mr. Rogers, is talking to them.
Yeah.
Not to everyone, but to them specifically. And that is a powerful gift that both of these documentaries really celebrate.
Well, Mr. Rogers was talking to me. I can remember that very clearly as a child. He was talking directly to me. I didn't ever understand why he was changing his shoes. That part always – I didn't know what that was about. But I'm so glad. I want to get that one and watch it because it just received so much attention. And this guy is a remarkable guy, Mr. Rogers.
And the film highlights the fact that for Rogers, it really was like that. One of the one of the actors on his show, the man who plays Officer Clemens, is African-American, who played a police officer and admitted that he had some misgivings about playing the role of a police officer. But there's a very special episode that the documentary really hits on where the two of them sit at a wading pool and they soak their bare feet together, singing, "There are so many ways to say I love you." And that scene in the 1960s really had a powerful cultural significance.
Yeah.
And Clemens has talked about how on their last show together, Mr. Rogers was delivering that line that he always said about making every day a special day just by being you. And he looked right at Clemens when he said it. And Clemens afterwards came up to him and said, "Were you talking to me?" And Rogers' response was, "I've been talking to you for years, but you heard me today."
Oh, wow. Wow. I imagine that's what the Lord says to a lot of us. Okay, so the name of the documentary then, the Mr. Rogers documentary?
Won't You Be My Neighbor.
Won't You Be My Neighbor. All right, Tim in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, listening on Real Presence Radio. You are up next. Your question or comment for Stephen Gradonis.
Hi, thanks. I've got a comment on the Ari Aster's Hereditary horror film from last year. I thought it had some really interesting things to say about the nature and source of evil and how that can be transmitted through relationships. But I did feel a little put off by the ending, without giving anything away, just kind of ending in total hopelessness and despair. But then once I began to hear other reviews of it, and I bristled at the fact that people were put off by the source of the evil being revealed, and I began to come to the film's defense, kind of understanding that evil is real and not just, you know, a figment of imagination.
Yeah.
So what would you think about that?
I thought that Hereditary had some very interesting ideas, and there's certainly some – and very well executed in some ways. I was not as impressed by it as some critics were, but I appreciate the points that you make. One of the things that I really liked about the film is a line that comes at the very end where the character says, "We repudiate or we reject the Holy Trinity." So the movie places itself in a Christian theological context and then repudiates that. I don't think that a movie that ends in despair and the triumph of evil is necessarily at least for the characters, is necessarily a bad thing depending on how they get to that place. One of my favorite horror movies of all time, and a movie that I think is a great film from a Christian point of view, is The Witch, a film that really puts schism and separation of oneself from the Christian community as a kind of the original sin that leads to downfall and that leads to damnation. So I can understand why people would be put off by such a dark ending, but for me, I think it can be powerfully redemptive. In the case of Hereditary, I thought that those ideas didn't pay out quite as well as the filmmaker wanted them to. So it's a question of interpretation. For me, it didn't work quite as well.
Okay, Tim.
Right.
All
yeah,
right.
Yeah. And I thought what was put off, what some critics were put off by was the fact that they revealed you know, in invoking the Trinity, that the evil was real. And that's what I wanted to defend about it was, no, that was, that was a good way to end it. So, and it's almost the antithesis of, say, The Exorcist, because the family never, you know, actually reached out for spiritual help, and, you know, the result was quite different. So thanks. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much, Tim, for that call. 888-318-7884 is our number. A whole bunch more of the best movies of the year 2018 for us to work through with Deacon Steve and Great Honest, but we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
Got questions? Visit us today at Catholic.com.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Divine Intimacy Radio.
When you engage with the wisdom of saints this way, it stokes the fires of God in our hearts, encourages us, strengthens us, and gives us wisdom to deal with the difficulties of life. It also gives us wisdom that allows us to rise above all of the junk, to live with joy and peace in the midst of even the most difficult circumstances.
Divine Intimacy Radio, Sunday, 6:30 a.m., 1:30 p.m., and 11 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Talk with Deacon Stephen Greidanis about the best movies of the year 2018. We've hit some of them. How did religious movies do this year?
This was a really amazing year for movies with religious themes. You know, the really high profile ones were Paul Schrader's First Reformed. It's just a very difficult film with a substantial religious pedigree. It gives shout outs to Diary of a Country Priest and to a lot of other prior films. Ethan Hawke plays a tortured pastor who struggles with the fate of the world and where things are going. Very dark film in some ways. For me, it had a special resonance because my father was a Reformed pastor before coming into the church 2 years after Suzanne and I did. And Paul Schrader comes from that same Christian Reformed background that my family comes from.
Well, so you felt that he captured it then?
I do. And I think that the ending of the film in particular is ambiguous and up for debate. I choose to interpret it as a prayer and as some kind of reaching out for redemption. But different people can interpret it different ways. One of the most bizarre and exhilarating films of the year from a religious perspective is a movie that is a musical about Joan of Arc. It's based on the pre- and post-conversion writings of the Catholic poet Charles Piggy, which has been turned by the filmmaker Bruno Dumont into a wild hard rock musical, Jeannette, The Childhood of Joan of Arc. You can watch this. I think it's on Amazon Prime right now. Jeannette, The Childhood of Joan of Arc. Amazing theological vision in this film.
Oh, okay. I'm looking forward to that. I'm a huge fan of Joan of Arc. So, all right. I'm looking forward. What did you think about Paul, Apostle of Christ?
I liked it. Jim Caviezel plays St. Luke, and it's a look at the last days of the Apostle Paul and at the circumstances in which the book of Acts first – the early gestation of the book of Acts. It also explores the early Christian community and their struggles with persecution and various ways of potentially dealing with it. As faith-based films go, I think it's one of the better and more interesting ones.
Chris in Tennessee is next. Chris is listening on the Catholic Answers app. Chris, thanks for downloading the app onto your phone. Your question for Deacon Stephen Greidanis.
Hi, this question is inspired by a review that you did in, I think, early February of 2018 for a film called Call Me By Your Name. And
yes.
I'm not necessarily here to go over the comments that you had about the film.
Uh-huh.
But yes. given that it is gratuitously homoerotic, where I want to ask you, as a Catholic film critic, where
yes.
would you, for lack of better terms, draw a line and say, this is not a film that Catholics should go and see? Like, what sort of attributes or topics would a film need to go over for you to say, like, you know, guys, I really wanted to give you a review of this film, but it's just not something you should see?
Okay. There are two questions there. One of them is, where would I draw the line about a film I'm even going to see and review? And then, where am I going to draw the line about what films I would recommend? So Call Me By Your Name is a film that I would not ordinarily see and that I would definitely not recommend. The only reason I saw it was that it was nominated for Best Picture, and as part of my work with Real Faith, we review all of the Best Picture nominees, so I was obligated to see it. I appreciated certain aspects of the production. I did not like the film. I do not recommend the film. I do think it's important, though, when a film has achieved a certain level in the public discussion, to be able to offer some perspective on it, on what it does, what it potentially does well for the people who like it, and therefore what is the possible ways that, you know, people can be seduced by this film, that it can sell us on whatever message it is that it's trying to sell us on. Other movies that I would just not see at all, there are many. They are legion. For instance, this year, among the many, many movies that I didn't see was the 50 Shades finale. I have not seen any of those films. When a movie has – I think when over-the-top offensive content is the main selling point of a film, there's probably no reason to engage it critically. With a film like Call Me By Your Name, although there is certainly an offensive and a morally poisonous message to the film, the movie explores human experiences in a sufficiently compelling way that the film is powerful for many people. And so because we have to live in a world where people think this way, I think it's important to understand what that film is doing, and that's why I think it's probably a good idea for films like that to be reviewed from a Catholic point of view.
Okay. So that answers my question about that particular film, but is there something that a film might necessarily have that you would say, and let's, for the sake of argument, say that it's not nominated for anything, nor are any of the,
sure.
The actors, like maybe it's got a cult following like 50 Shades, but there are obviously no nominations. Is there something that you would say, like, you know, I'm not even going to review it?
Yeah, there are many things, and I would take it on a case by case basis. There are many films that I would just put, that I have put, that I do put off limits for me for many reasons. If some kind of offensive or objectionable content is the main selling point, or if it crosses a certain line, like, you know, into, for instance, if there are sex scenes where the actors are really engaging in sex, that would be something that I would just, you know, cross the line off completely, even if it wasn't explicit. And obviously, if it is explicit, then so much the more so.
Chris, thank you very, very much for the call. Felipe in Spring, Texas, you are up next. Your question for Deacon Stephen Graydonis.
Hi, Deacon. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Felipe.
I would like you comment in the movie Rome or Roma that gave the
yes.
prize of the best documental a couple of weeks ago. I was invited to my wife to watch in Netflix, and I got was a terrible, terrible movie for me. I just stopped to watch in the first 30 minutes, and my wife said that she finished, but that was not a good movie at all.
We're talking about Roma.
Have your comment, please.
Okay, Felipe,
sure.
Thank you. We're talking about Roma. It's gotten a lot of attention, this movie, Roma.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Fair enough.
From Alfonso Cuarón, it's a Mexican film. My group, the New York Film Critics Circle, named it the best movie of the year, and a lot of other critics groups are also highly acclaiming it. I did enjoy it very much, not as much as some, but I thought it was a very well-crafted film about the director Alfonso Cuarón's childhood, growing up in Mexico City in a middle-class Mexican family with a maid. The maid is a central character. And the movie is really about the family's experiences at a time when the men in the lives of these women are abandoning them. So the father, reflecting what actually happened in Alfonso Cuarón's real experience, the father abandons his wife and family. And at the same time, a man who has gotten the maid pregnant abandons her in a very cruel and vicious way. And so the movie explores the relationship between the maid and the family. And so it's about class, and it's about the relationship of the sexes, and it's about Mexican politics in the late 1960s and early 1970s. And it's just amazingly shot. It's such a gorgeous film to watch. And so I think there are a lot of things that Cuarón does that are valuable and interesting. I'm sorry that you didn't connect with the film. But I thought it's very well done.
Was it shot in Spanish or English?
It's shot in multiple languages, mostly Spanish.
Oh, okay.
And there is, there's a tiny bit of English, and then also, the Mixtec language, which is, it's an indigenous language that is spoken by the maid and by some other characters.
We're going to say thank you, Felipe, because we're coming near the end, and I got a couple things I want to ask Deacon Stephen Gradonis. Maybe a movie that we haven't heard of, or maybe would have passed over, that you'd say, don't miss this, go see this movie.
Right. Thank you so much, because we have not yet talked about my favorite film of the year.
Okay.
Which is, and I have to say, I knew as soon as I saw it, almost from the beginning, that it was my favorite film, and nothing since then has called that into question. It is called The Rider, and it is by Chloe Zhao. This is a film set in the American West of today, and it's a world of cowboys and Indians. But these are not antagonists, and they're not even different people. These are Native Americans who are also cowboys. And it's about the real lives of the people who are playing the roles. So the main character, Brady, is played by a real Native American whose name is Brady, who really lives a life very much like the character he's playing. It's almost a kind of a quasi-documentary. And Brady has a disastrous accident in a rodeo. He is trampled by a bucking bronco and cracks his skull. And so that gives a shape to the story, which becomes about different kinds of brokenness and about Brady's struggles with feeling called by God to ride. And this is something now that the doctors are telling him that he can't do because it will threaten his life. So it explores Brady's faith and the hardships that he struggles and what he feels he's called to as a cowboy, as a Native American, as a Christian, as a man. And it is absolutely beautiful. It's shot in the Badlands of South Dakota on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. It has some of the most beautiful landscapes and skies that you will see in any film of 2018. And the Christian faith of Brady and his world is just a part, matter of fact, part of the culture. It's part of the background. It's not a big deal, but it's very much there. And, you know, the fact that for Brady, his faith is something that really sees him through this crisis.
The movie is called The Rider.
The Rider.
The Rider. Okay, that is a must see. Then, what a ringing endorsement! Cowboys and Indians, but they're the same people, and a story of brokenness and healing and Christian faith. Deacon Gradonis, thanks. I feel like this hour went way too fast, but thanks for doing it with us.
Thank you so much, Si. It was great to be here.
You can find Deacon Gradonis's top films of 2018 at the National Catholic Register. So look there. Next hour, don't go away. It's coming. The Catholic Answers game show right after this with top secret guest Jimmy Akin.